Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. It is Sunday, June 8th, at least for us. For you, it'll be, you know, Monday, June 9th or whatever. But we are going to get back into some buying and selling of rankings of players. We went through a bunch of hitters last week. We ran out of time to get to the pitchers, so we'll get to them today. But first, Pete, as always, we got to talk about our head-to-head heroes, guys who stood out for you this week. And looking at offense this week, I feel like there are just so many choices. There's probably some good pitchers too, but I didn't even get past the hitters.
Yeah, sorry. I have that like weird feeling where I'm about to sneeze, but it's just not coming out. My opponent this week in my home league started off like four home runs within the first, honestly, like hour of Monday's games. And I was like, it's just going to be one of those weeks. So fortunately, the offense ended up going both ways. It just felt like it was a big offensive week.
Yeah. And so I did go with a bat. Did you go with a bat? Did you go with an arm? Who'd you go with this time?
I'm going with a bat this time as well, but you can go first in case it is my guy. Okay. I don't want to steal yours.
I was sort of torn. And we can have some honorable mentions, because like I said, big offensive week, but the name that stood out to me only because you should have expected this from him all along, and it just hasn't been happening this year, and last year wasn't as great either, but I went with Adley Rutschman. Rutschman this week, I don't know, I have no idea what he did today, I should check that, but seven previous days, a couple home runs, a .381 average, he's getting on base at a .435 clip over that time. And Rutschman, two more hits and a walk today. So that only helps all of those stats. The hits were singles. I guess it's not that exciting, but still. But after, you know, his first 2 years, Adley had a 354 wOBA as a rookie, 352 his sophomore year. Last year was 309. This year, coming into today, it was 307. After today, it's up to 312. But you know, we had expected Adley Rutschman going into last season to be an elite catcher, maybe the best catcher, right? I mean, way up there near the top of the list, and he simply didn't do it. The defense has still been great from him, but his offensive production hasn't really been there. And I at least thought, yeah, down year, it happens. Maybe he was banged up. I'm sure he's going to be fine. And he hasn't been fine. He hasn't been, and I guess that's a, let's not be unkind to Adley Rutschman here. Like, he's on pace for like a 2.5 win, 3-win season, which is what he had last year, which is good. He's a good baseball player, but we expected, I don't know, we expected 5 wins from him, since that's what he put up his first 2 years. So when I say he hasn't been good, it's, you know, he hasn't been good by the standard he set. And Adley Rutschman did himself no favors by setting a standard that was so high that we can only be disappointed by what he's been doing this year. But the last week, he's been legitimately good. And I gotta wonder, like, are things going to turn around for him? Like, is this the beginning of him finding whatever it was he had prior to last season? And I think part of the challenge for me is, like, I'm not totally sure what that was. Like, his barrel rate went down a bit last year. His hard hit rate wasn't really down last year. Both of those numbers are up this year. They're both better than they were either of his first two seasons. His average EV was down last year. It's up this year. His launch angle, which got a little high last year. So his rookie year, it was 15.6, 12.6 the sophomore year. Went up to 18.8 last year. This year, it's down to 15.9. I think that's probably a good down, given it coincides with his better performances his first two seasons. And it's worth noting that even coming into play today, ex-WOBA was 365, which was better than his rookie year, not quite as good as his sophomore year, but right in that range. So I actually think as I looked into him, you know, was wondering like, oh, is this it? Is this the week he's finally figuring things out and everything's gonna go back to how it was? Well, like, I kind of think this season he figured things out. He's hitting the ball harder again. He's barreling the ball more. He's been doing that over the season. This week has certainly helped that. But I think the answer is he is sort of the guy we hoped or thought he would be a couple years ago, and he just hasn't been really getting the results. Right? He's got a 242 BABIP this year. The home run per fly ball rate's a little low, but like last year he chased a bunch more. This year he's not doing that. Last year he increased the swing strike rate. This year it's back down, actually a career low. So I think what we're seeing is this week is for Adley Rutschman is the fruits of the labor he put in, I guess, right? It's like he's already made the improvements. He's already gotten back to being the guy we want him to be. We just weren't seeing the numbers to back it up, and now we're seeing those numbers.
Yeah, I just think he's going to be most likely a stud going forward. And when we say a stud as a catcher, right, he's not going to produce crazy fantasy numbers for an outfielder or a first baseman, but for a catcher, I could see him easily being top three going forward. Probably not one, considering how Cal Raleigh's hitting
Cal
the ball.
Raleigh,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, he's out of control. But Rutschman, he kind of reminds me to a lesser degree of Bo Bichette, where it was like, you know, Bo Bichette's track record was a little bit longer, but Rutschman, his first 2 years in the big leagues were incredible. WRC plus of 135 his rookie year, and then 127 his sophomore year. And then last year, everything still kind of looked good. It was just not the season we had hoped for. And the WRC plus went down to 104. And then he gets off to the slow start, and it's like, well, wait a second. So is he just not that good? And no, I still think he is. It just took him a while to get going again. So I'm firmly in the Adley Rutschman camp. I think he's an interesting choice for this week because Fletcher Keel, who is a listener, he used to be in our head-to-head listener league number two on Fan Tracks. I sent him an offer in a deep league of Nolan Arenado and Austin Wells for Adley Rutschman. And because it's a deep league, it's like it's hard to give up a player like Nolan Arenado because My other third baseman is Max Muncy, who just became relevant again. And like, is that going to last? And if anything happens, I don't have a third baseman anymore. So I just thought it was an interesting offer. I ended up canceling it. I was like, I don't think I want to do this. Austin Wells has like a million RBI. But the reason why I sent it is because I noticed what you're noticing. Adley Rutschman is back on the rise.
Yeah. Max Muncy, by the way, you could have picked him for this week. Three home runs. He stole a base. That's
two bases, I think.
Two.
He had one today.
Oh, there you go. Oh, there you go. I mean, am I wheels. Wrong for being confused by that? Like, he had. I'm looking back
at the production career.
The stolen bases. He's been hitting for a few weeks now. Like Muncy, and he had some change. Right, he got like contacts are corrected in astigmatism or some vision thing. I'll have to look this up. But he's been good for a little while now. But yeah, I mean, he has stolen in his career. So his two seasons in Oakland, which were brief, right? 95, 96 total games. He didn't steal a single base. In his seasons in LA, he has stolen 3-4-1-2-2-1-1 and now has 3 this year already. He is one stolen base away from a career high in stolen bases, from tying his career high. One. So, yeah, every time he steals a base, it's like, where did that come from? But
speed demon.
He's running.
I don't know. Maybe all that time off he's gotten because of his poor hitting, he, you know, put into getting a little bit quicker. Quick correction. He didn't steal a base today. He stole it yesterday, and other stolen base was back on like May 27th. But when Max Muncy steals two bags within like 2.5 weeks, you think the world is ending. So they're pretty memorable events. My player of the week, I kind of went back and forth. Once again, it was a week where like the obvious dudes are the ones at the top, so it's not as fun, which is why I loved your pick there. I'm going to go with Christian Encarnacion Strand, who is back up with the Reds and is on fire. So he was off to that disappointing start, and then he got hurt. And on his minor league rehab assignment, he was kind of nasty. OPS over 1,000, two homers and 44 at-bats. He has a homer in each of his last three games since getting called back up. He has been on fire. If you look at his batted balls over that time period, since he came back up on June 6th, he has 107 mile an hour single, 103 mile an hour homer, 107 mile an hour double, 103 mile an hour homer, 107 mile an hour flyout. And then today he just kept it going. 108.5 mile an hour single and a 104.6 mile an hour homer. That's just all those are just over the last three games. So this dude is hitting the ball, or I'm sorry, seeing the ball and hitting the ball pretty well. So this is a player who had some excitement before, Chad. He's a guy who's like not high up on prospect list because he's more of like a fantasy hope than necessarily like a I don't know if my mind goes here because of the name, but like I just keep thinking of Edwin Encarnacion, right? Like red power hitter Encarnacion. And Edwin Encarnacion was awesome. So I don't mean to take the comparison any further than that. It's just the name that always comes to my mind. But he was a guy with some hype for his bat, and it looks like it might be coming together for him over these last three games.
The other little note on CES that I think is it certainly is important in auto new leagues, but also other formats may become important. Did you see where he started the last two games, yesterday and today?
No, I didn't.
Third base.
That's exciting.
It is exciting because he's a first baseman. At least we thought he was a first baseman. I don't know, you know, who knows how long this lasts. Like, I don't know if they view him as a third baseman now. I am not saying they view him as a third baseman now. If you look back over the Reds' last, you know, few games, let me see if I can pull this up real quick. So he started at third base the last 2 days. The day before that, it was Santiago Espinal, and it was mostly Espinal going back before that. They have Gavin Lux as their primary DH lately, although he shows up in left field here and there. They have, Steer is still playing first, right? Yeah. So Steer has also played a little bit of outfield, but mostly has been playing first base. That makes it hard to sort of figure out where exactly Encarnacion Strand fits in the lineup. And this is how they're doing it, right? Is they're slotting him in at third base. Now, eventually you're going to get Noelvi Marte back, right? I mean, I don't know what his, I can't remember his timeline, but they've got Marte coming back. Let's see. Most recent update, which was like over a week ago, was he had a follow-up MRI, which showed further progress. Go ahead to start rotational activity. So, you know, Noelvi's not close yet, but he's working his way back. And Jaime Candelario is still around, although he's also hurt. And he's in a rehab assignment as of a few days ago. So he could be back soon. And so that's going to start to get more crowded. And I don't know what's going to happen to CES. If he's hitting the way he's hitting, nothing's going to happen to him. He's like, you don't take that bat out of the lineup if it's performing that way. Certainly not for Jaime Candelario. Certainly not to get Espinal back in the lineup. I think the question becomes when Marte is back, how do they deal with that? Because Marte should be in the lineup as well. And then, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's Steer to the outfield. Like, Will Benson right now is holding down left field and doing a good job there. But, like, I don't know how long that continues. So it becomes this interesting game of sort of musical chairs in Cincinnati where the question becomes, like, who falls back to earth first? Who do you want to bet on staying in that lineup? Because basically Lux and Steer, it's Lux, Steer, Benson, and Encarnacion Strand for now for those four spots. And you're going to add Noelvi Marte and Jaime Candelario to that mix at some point. I right now, given sort of the combination of the pedigree and what he's doing and sort of my belief in his bat, like I'm counting on Encarnacion Strand to stay in that mix. And I think for me, like, Steer should be safe. I know he hasn't been as good this year as he was last, but like, I think Steer should be safe. Lux has been good for them and is versatile for them. And I think they're going to want to keep him in the lineup. There's a reason they've been keeping him at DH. So I think he's pretty safe. And so I think it's a question of like Benson, Noelvi, how do they fit in? Does Fraley start losing time? Like, I'm not really sure how it all fits together, but it's a good problem to have if you're the Reds.
Yeah, Benson's been pretty streaky, obviously, throughout his career, so it certainly could be him. Steer, I mean, I don't you know, I've voiced my concerns about Spencer Steer in the past, and the WRC plus right now is 73. The strikeout rate is by far the worst of his career, and the walk rate is also the worst of his career. He's just, other than the versatility he can bring to the field, he's really not bringing a lot to the table. So I really think everybody is kind of up for grabs once Candelario and Marte come back. Even Marte himself, he was great, and he started to really cool off before the oblique injury. So it just seems like a pool of mediocrity. And if I was the Reds, the highest upside there is definitely Marte and definitely Encarnacion Strand. So I feel pretty good about those two staying in the lineup. The rest of these guys, ugh, I don't know.
Yeah, it's worth noting that with you mentioned Benson being streaky. So if you go back a few weeks, he had a double on May 19th. And then I don't know if they I'm not looking at their schedule. I'm just looking at his game logs. I don't know if they didn't have a game or if he just didn't play on the 20th. He pinch hit on the 21st, didn't play on the 22nd, went 0 for 3 on the 23rd. He went 0 for 3 on the 23rd after not starting that game. He came in as a pinch hitter and went 0 for 3. And then since the 24th, he has been starting a couple games there as a pinch hitter. But since the 24th, his WRC plus is 9. Not 99, not even 89. It's 9. So whatever was going on with Will Benson in the hot streak, the cold has come back in a meaningful way. That is, you know, a little concerning for his long-term role.
And he does not have the versatility of Lux or Steer. He's just an outfielder.
And for what it's worth, Steer, since May 11th, arbitrary date here, it's been almost a month, but since May 11th, he has a 108 WRC plus. So Steer has been back to more what you'd expect for the last month or so. Now, there is a 407 BAPIP there, so it's a little bit of, there's some noise involved in that, but he is performing better, hitting the ball better, I think, over that stretch. I'd have to dig in a little more, but the results are going to keep him in the lineup given his history.
So far in June, it's only a week, but he's back down to an 81. I'm biased. I've never believed in this guy, and so it's confirmation bias seeing him struggle.
I guess what I would just say is you may not have ever believed in him, but the Reds do. Right. And so for now, but I think that he's going to have more leash because of that. Right. He's an established part of the team. He brings some versatility
and he should have more of a leash than those other guys for sure.
Yeah. So those are our head to head heroes. Let's jump into some more of these guys we talked about last week, and just to remind you what we're doing. We're looking at guys who are having not necessarily totally unexpected seasons. These aren't guys who have all come out of nowhere, but they're guys whose seasons have been better than we anticipated, and questioning how high are you buying or how much do you want to sell them? We talked last week about we talked about James Wood, we talked about Pete Crow Armstrong, we talked about Junior Caminero, Andy Paz, Bregman. We talked about a lot of guys, but we're going to move to the pitchers this week. And if you go to the Razzball Player Rater, Pete, the number one and number two pitchers in the Razzball Player Rater are Hunter Brown, Carlos Rodon. And those are guys that there are certainly people out there who have Brown and Rodon on their rosters because they were like, these guys are good. I think they're going to have good seasons. I'm in on them. If anybody says, yes, I have them on my rosters because I thought they would be the number one and number two pitchers in baseball this year, they're lying to you. Nobody expected that from either of these guys, let alone both of them. So, and I think if you look at this, I have some questions for the player rater of how those guys end up ahead of Tarek Skubal. I suspect it has to do with wins. They both that's got to be the difference. And depending on your format, wins are a stat and they matter and you have to account for them. And so that's fine. The Tigers are one of the best teams in baseball though. So there's no real reason to think that moving forward, Skubal's not going to get more than his fair share of wins. So like, I'm still young. I am still taking Tarek Skubal over those two. I am still going to take Paul Skeens over those two. I'm still going to take Zach Wheeler over those two. And I think my question for you, Pete, is how far should I keep going? When do I stop? I just now in a matter of moments took them from 1-2 to 4-5. How far down the list are we going with Hunter Brown and Carlos Rodon before you're like, no, they belong. They're top 10, top 15, top 20.
Man. Okay. So you said Skubal, Skeens, and Wheeler.
Yeah. Those are the ones I mentioned.
Okay. I mean, I'm still going to take Crochet. I'm still going to take Yamamoto. The fact that it's already getting kind of hard though, like Logan Gilbert, sure. I don't know. Logan Webb, I don't know if I can do it. I'm not going to do it. Nope. Chris Sale, yes. I think they're both safely top 15 right now. I think that's totally fair. And look, Carlos Rodon has been top 5 before. This is not out of the realm of possibility for him. Like, I thought he was done because the people I listened to seemed to think he was done. So I just kind of went along with that, a little bit of groupthink. But clearly, he has readjusted. Like, part of it, too, is I was all in on Carlos Rodon last year, and that just went so poorly. So naturally, now that I'm all out, he turns back into a superstar. It's just kind of how that goes. But he's mixed things up a little bit. He's relying less on the fastball. His strikeouts have come storming back, even though the swing strike rate is down a little bit. So I think Rodon is just a stud. And with the Yankees backing him, there's going to be plenty of wins to boost not only that player rater value, but also just literally the value for your teams if you're in win leagues. And he pitches deep into games, so the quality starts will be there. Hunter Brown, we've seen him have not quite this much success in the past, but like we've seen him pitch incredibly well. And then it just turned on a dime. And then he was almost unrosterable for stretches at a time. So I'm not saying that's going to happen again, but he obviously doesn't have quite the track record that Rodon has. Given how well he's performed, though, I think right now for me, he's a top 15 starter. Now, keep in mind, we've lost a lot of pitchers. Just over the last week, we've lost a lot of pitchers. Lord knows that Corbin Burns injury has just shattered my rosters. TGFBI of 2-0 new leagues, like everywhere. I'm just cooked from that thing. And he's not the only one. Spencer Strider, not hurt, fortunately, but not performing like we kind of hoped he would bounce back to. So there's a lot of guys who were firmly in that top 15 over the last couple of years that are no longer a part of the equation, which helps Hunter Brown's case. But for your keeper leagues, which is what this is all about, man, oof, Hunter Brown, you got him on a good keeper league contract. He's pitching like a top 5 arm, and I think he could be a top 15 guy. So sure, yeah, both top 15.
Yeah, I mean, I think I just pulled up Eno Saris's most recent rankings just to sort of another source to look at here. And Eno leans very heavily, as I'm sure you know, on Stuff Plus when he does his rankings. It's a big part of how he thinks about things. And so when you look at his rankings, he shows the Stuff Plus for each pitcher. And I was noticing here that as you go through his top 10, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4 pitchers with a Stuff Plus over 110. There's a fifth at 110. Oh, no, there's a sixth over 110, but he's down at number 20 on his rankings. But those pitchers over a 110 Stuff Plus are Skubal at 119, Garrett Crochet at 113, Hunter Green at 126, which, yeah, Hunter Green stuff is nasty, and Hunter Brown at 111. The guy down at 20th on his rankings, Christopher Sanchez at 113 Stuff Plus, which is interesting. But he has Brown 9th in his rankings. So he has gone up and pushed Brown into the top 10. And that's, you know, it's hard to argue with. He has Rodon all the way down at 27. Now he's got Rodon with a 104 Stuff Plus, which still isn't bad. But he's not as high on Rodon. There's no comments here, so I don't really have any good clear answer as to why he's lower on Rodon. For me, I think it's interesting you mentioned the track record for Rodon, because for me the track record is where I'm more nervous about Rodon than I am about Brown. Because Rodon to me, like, we've seen velocity sort of come and go with him. It is not his velocity this year at like 94.4. It's not at its peak by any means. It was 95.4 last year, for example. But it's up above where we saw him in his last couple of years. It was Chicago when it became, or not his last couple of years. His last year with Chicago was great. The 2 years before that were Chicago where he really struggled. So he's kept that velocity up, which has been good. I just think we've seen things come and go for him for so many years. And I don't, like, this is his age 32 season. It's not a moment where like, oh, he's breaking out. And when I go look under the hood, like his swinging strike rate is down from last year. His barrel rate's down, his hard hit rate's down. So he's giving up less hard contact. His ground ball rate is way up. And that is maybe the one big thing I should point to and be like, yeah, that's great. But nothing about his, like, I don't know. I don't see a lot about his to explain why his strikeout rate is so much higher this year than it was last year. And so I have a little bit of is he really going to keep this up, or is he going to go back to being the guy he was for big chunks of last year? Add to that his injury history, right? I mean, if you go year by year, he threw 175 innings last year, but only 64.1 the year before that. He was up at 178 the year before that, but only 132 the year before that. He only threw 7.2 in 2020, the shortened season, and 34.2 in 2019. He's at 79.2 innings. So if you start looking forward the rest of this year, like, are you betting on him getting to one? You know, does he have another 100 innings left in him, right? Is he going to get back to where he was last year or not? I don't know with Rodon. I think I don't have any good reason to look at him right now and say, no, he can't do that. But I get a little bit of anxiety about it because of his history. Whereas Brown, like, you know, his full seasons, if you look, 2022, he threw 126 innings across MLB and the minors, 155.2 last or 2 years ago, 170 last year. He's on pace for like 180 this year. Like he's just sort of chugging along from an innings perspective, the way we'd expect. He's got a career high swing strike rate that's driving his strikeout rate up. I look at him and he looks to me more like a 26-year-old. He'll turn 27 in August, 26, 27-year-old who is finding it. And he's found it before, but like who's putting it all together, right? And this feels more like a Hunter Brown puts it all together year. Whereas with Rodon, I just get a little bit more of a like, I don't know, is this going to last, or is this just another, you know, are we waiting for the next injury or the next velocity drop or whatever? Because we've seen it from him so much before and he's getting a little older. That isn't to say I'm super low on either of these guys. I'm intrigued by both of them, not as the number one and number two pitchers in fantasy, but I would take, I mean, the age matters here too, but like I would take Brown over Rodon. I would take him over Rodon for the season, and I would certainly take him over Rodon for keeper leagues. But I think they're probably, you know, I think Brown is maybe just outside my top 10, but inside my top 15. And Rodon's probably outside my top 15, but inside my top 20.
Yeah, I think all that's fair. I mean, I guess I wasn't looking at it so much as a player to player comp versus, you know, where do I stand on each of these guys? You know, head to head, I could totally see going Brown over Rodon. I mean, Rodon's career is told in many different stories, right? You brought up the innings totals from like 5 years ago, but I mean, keep in mind, he was coming off of Tommy John surgery and the breakout came after Tommy John surgery. So to me, like all that he has dealt with in his career, it just felt like bad luck. There was plenty of bad pitching and there was a lot of injuries and it just felt like it all came together for him. And like, call it a small sample if you want, but for over 300 innings, he wasn't just good. I mean, he was top five pitch. I mean, he was a sub 3 ERA, probably around 2.5, like Cy Young contender. And then, like, yes, it was scary when he started his Yankee tenure with some forearm tightness. But the only reason he missed so much time, it ended up being when he was coming back, he ended up hurting his back a little bit. So, like, it's tricky to talk injuries because, yes, Rodon has an extensive injury history. He kind of feels reliable right now, knock on wood. Hunter Brown, I'm not saying he is injured or going to get injured, but so much is made out of velocity. And he's throwing the seventh hardest on average fastball in baseball. Like, yeah. we don't know if he can keep that going. As a matter of fact, what we do know is that most guys can't keep that going. So, you know, I hate to even put that into the atmosphere. I hate to even say that, but like, it's really tricky to talk injuries when it comes to these guys. There is, I think, a level of comfort when there's a pitcher who went through all those injuries and has come out the other side and has had some heavy innings total since then, like a Zach Wheeler type, not saying that Rodon is quite that durable, but I think you get what I'm saying. So I like both. I definitely prefer Brown in a keeper league. I kind of expect both to continue to pitch well. And I feel comfortable saying I got both in the top 15 for now.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I got one more question about Rodon specifically, but we'll get into some more pitchers as well. All right, welcome back. Pete, I got a trade offer last week in a dynasty league where I have Spencer Torkelson. This is a sort of a wild situation in this dynasty league because I traded Luis Renjifo for Torque way back at the beginning of the offseason, at a moment where Renjifo had been injured, but was coming off of, you know, people expected him to be a solid contributor, multiple positions. Torque had struggled, but people were like, the breakout's coming. They're still, you know, whatever. And then over the course of the offseason, that trade looked awful for me because Torque looked like he didn't have a job and all this stuff. And obviously now it looks just great for me. And I'm very, very happy with it, obviously. I spent a lot of time trying to trade for another first baseman in that league because Torque was my only sort of true first baseman. I have Cody Bellinger on that roster. I have Wilson Contreras on that roster. I have Ryan O'Hearn on that roster. So I've got guys who qualify at first, but he's my only, he's the only guy I regularly play at first. I got offered Rodon for Torque. Not as an official offer, but as sort of a theoretical, I was kicking this around, what do you think? And I was just like, nah. I get it, but nah. And I need pitching. Was I too quick to dismiss Rodon there in a dynasty?
How much was the cost on Rodon?
There's no cost here. It's like true dynasty. So they're both free to keep forever.
You just keep them forever. Yeah. I think I'd probably do the deal. I like Torkelson. I think we're just still trying to figure out what he is. I think there's still this like air of like, oh, well, he's going to break out and be a stud. I just don't know if that's going to happen. And I still think he could be a very good player. Right. And so it's trying to figure out what exactly he's going to be. Like the batting average down at 237, his expected batting average is 238. Like, is it going to get that much better for Spencer Torkelson? And he's still so young. He's only 25 years old. And look, he's been more promising this year than not. But if I needed pitching, I think, you know, I said Rodon's top 15. You said you feel comfortable with him as a top 25 starter. I think in either scenario, I'm willing to give up a Spencer Torkelson for that.
Got it. All right. For me, it's mostly the long term is that I actually won't have a first baseman on that team next season if I make that trade. And so
that makes things a little hairy.
A challenge. Anyways, let's talk about some other pitchers. Next guy I wanted to talk about, because if you go down through the Razzball player radar, as I mentioned, Rodon and Brown 1 and 2. Most of the rest of the top of this list, 3, 4, 5, like Max Fried, no surprise. Everyone knows he's good. Tarek Skubal probably should be number one. Robbie Ray, maybe a little bit of a surprise, but we all knew this was possible. At least something like this was possible. And we maybe should come back and talk to him. 6 is Garrett Crochet. 7 is Zach Wheeler. But the next sort of truly shocking, maybe the first truly shocking name, because Rodon and Brown, we know, are good pitchers. Chris Bubich is 8th on the Razzball player radar for starting pitchers. He is one spot ahead of Paul Skeens. And yes, wins are part of this again, but he's more in the Tarek Skubal category of wins than in, like, he's not getting a ton of value from wins so far. So this is it. He's just been that good. I mean, he has a 1.43 ERA. 1.43. I don't know. But then you go and look, and like last year, yes, it was in a relief role, but last year in a relief role, he had a 1.95 FIP, a 2.67 ERA. The last time he was a starter in 2023, it was only three starts, but he had a 2.63 FIP. Maybe he's just better than I think. Is Chris Bubich just better than I think?
I think he's good. I think there's no question about that. I remember before his Tommy John surgery, he looked like he may be breaking out. I specifically remember him coming up in a lot of new auctions and like going for some pretty crazy prices. People were like, oh man, it was here. And then they spent all that money and literally like three or four starts later, he's down with Tommy John surgery. So no surprise he comes back in the relief role. They build him back well. I really think the Royals got something figured out when it comes to pitching. And full-blown starter this year, and some people were in on him. A lot, some of the analysts I listened to were like, watch out for Chris Bubich, and sure enough, he looks like a stud. The ERA estimators would suggest he's been a little bit lucky, but I think whenever you have an ERA of 1.43, you know, you've probably got a little bit lucky. They're still really, really good. His expected ERA is 2.81. His FIP is 2.44, and his expected FIP is 3.27. So, like, there's not a lot of places to point to say, like, yeah, there's a lot of regression coming. I mean, look, the strand rate's pretty high at 86.5%. The home run to fly ball rate is just 4.3%. And granted, those are two places where we'll really look and decide if a guy's been lucky or not. The BABIP down at 266, maybe there's also a little bit of luck involved there. But at the end of the day, the results are what they are. And I don't anticipate Chris Bubich getting a lot worse from here. He's not going to stay this good. I don't think he's going to win the Cy Young Award. But is he perhaps a top 30 starter going forward? I think that is more likely than it is not.
Top 30, you think? Is that what you said?
Well, right now, he's top five or whatever.
Yeah,
top 10.
Eight. Yeah, he's eighth.
I think if I had to like rank out all the pitchers, I think I'd have a tough time getting him outside of my top 30, especially with how many injuries there's been.
So let me throw some names at you. I'm going to use Eno's list again just as a starting point. But here are his last three inside the top 20. So this is his 18, 19, and 20. He's got Joe Ryan, Framber Valdez, and Christopher Sanchez. You taking Bubich over any of those three?
I don't think so. I'm still a little nauseous about Christopher Sanchez's recent, what was it, forearm tightness or something. It still makes me a little queasy. And it's not like his track record is that much longer than Bubich's, but the other two, definitely not.
Yeah. All right. Now, his last three in the top 25. Although this is... Oh, I'm going to skip this one because his 23, 24, and 25 are Pablo Lopez, Spencer Strider, and Michael King, and two of those dudes are hurt. So let's move on. His last three inside the top 30, Luis Castillo, Robbie Ray, Nick Pivetta. Are you taking Bubich over those three?
Hold on. He has Robbie Ray 29th?
Yes.
Whoa. There's no chance right now I'm taking Bubich over Robbie Ray. Castillo and Pivetta. Yes, I will take Chris Bubich over Luis Castillo and Nick Pivetta.
Okay. Yeah, I have a hard time with Bubich because maybe it's because he's in the Central and so I've seen him pitch more than some of these other guys, but like he does not look impressive when he pitches. Like he doesn't throw hard. His pitches don't look nasty. Like he doesn't like, there's nothing that like I watch him pitch and I'm like, yeah, that's why you get guys out. Like, and like you mentioned Robbie Ray. It's like when you watch Robbie Ray pitch, yeah, I know he's been up and down. Yeah, we know he's had his struggles. But like when Robbie Ray is on, you're like, yeah, how do dudes hit that? How does that ever happen? Right. And so I get what you're saying on that. On Bubich, like I watch him pitch and I'm like, why isn't he getting absolutely lit up? Like, what is going on here? And so I just have a hard time buying it. And so I think for me, if you're asking me, am I buying Bubic as a top 30 starter? I think the answer is no. I don't think he's far outside that. I'm like, he obviously is doing something effective. The strikeout, you know, strikeout minus walk percentage is 19.4. That's really good. I just don't quite get it. And maybe that's my blind spot, but it doesn't feel sustainable to me.
No, I miss this kind of analysis. At the end of the day, the guy doesn't pass the sniff test. Like, I believe in that, man. And like, look, I've been playing a long time. I've had my fair share of success, and I go by that test too. What I would say in Bubic's defense is that, like, sometimes guys who are good at generating soft contact, they don't always look super nasty, right? What comes to mind for me was Keith Foulke. Back when I was a kid, you know, you'd watch like Pedro or Schilling, and then in comes Keith Foulke, and it's like, oh my god, this guy's gonna get nuked. But every day he just got the save, and it didn't pass the sniff test, and yet the results were there. In Bubic's case, you know, I mean, that a swinging strike rate of 14.6%, whether it looks pretty or not, that will play. And that was a 14.8 last year and a 14.7 last year, or the year before that, I should say. And while it's weird because the strikeouts aren't really there, like, that shows that he's got some deception to his stuff. So I totally hear you, and I can appreciate a guy just not passing the sniff test. That's to go back to Spencer Steer. That's kind of how I am with him. But in Bubic's case, particularly, you know, with a home park in Kansas City, it makes me feel a little bit more comfortable, right? Like that helps. I'll buy him as a top 30 guy. Why not?
Okay. I think that makes sense. I get what you're saying, and I probably should reconsider at least a little bit. I don't know. I just can't feel
it. No, I love it. I think you got to see this through. You got to chase this feeling, because if it's right, man, you got something.
Yeah. I mean, if it's right, the thing I have is not having Chris Bubic, who I already don't have. So it's not that valuable a thing to be right about. But at least I won't make a big trade for him or something. Although now that we've had this conversation, I'm probably going to be like, I wonder what I could, what it would take to get...
What? Oh, God, can I issue an official apology on the podcast?
Sure.
I may have just ruined Carlos Rodon's career, because five innings, five earned runs, three walks, two homers against the Red Sox, who I know they had 10 runs the other day, but this team sucks. They can't hit their way out of a paper bag. So they got a guy by the name of Carlos Narvaez batting cleanup, who's actually a surprise catcher this year, and Rob Refsnyder batting third. And they hung five on Carlos Rodon. So never mind. Top 70 starter Carlos Rodon.
He gave up two home runs in that game as well, which is
one to Narvaez and one to the struggling Christian Campbell.
Oh, Campbell needed that. Goodness. Five strikeouts and five innings in bad, but three walks. A little concerning. Yep. And by the way, he gave up those five runs with a 0.91 BABIP. That's hard to do.
Yeah, that's walks will kill you. That's what they say.
That is what they will say. I'll have to dig into that start later and see if there's anything up with like his velocity or anything like that. But yeah, that's not great. Let's take another quick break. We'll take another quick break, and we come back. We got one reliever to talk about before we wrap up. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We've been talking starting pitching, but we're gonna move to the pen. And we're going to talk, hold on one second, maybe, if I can make this work. We're going to talk about a guy who so far has not yet cracked, I don't think, the top 10 relievers in the Rise Ball Player Rater. He has not. I am confirming that as we speak. He is, goodness, he is 51st. How does that even make sense? Daniel Palencia seems to be the closer in Chicago, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't know if there's anyone else we can look at and be like, yeah, this guy is going to take the job. I mean,
Valencia, I can't take any more Ryan Pressly. So,
well, yeah, I definitely don't think it's him.
Porter Hodge is working his way back, but he's not like some, like the way Palencia is pitching, the reason why we're about to talk about him, it has to be him.
I think so. So, and I had a conversation with to bring up Eno Saracen. I had a conversation with Eno on Blue Sky week or two, maybe 3 weeks ago, about closers, where on Rates and Barrels, he and DVR were talking about how he was expecting like Orion Kerkering or someone to just take the job from Jordan Romano. And what I basically was saying was, I don't think those guys can take the job from him. He has to give it up. And that is my general belief with closers, is that once somebody has the job, and this applies more to someone like Romano, who's an established closer, than it does to Palencia, but hear me out. Once a guy has the job and they are the capital C closer for a team, they don't lose the job because somebody else is better. They lose the job because they stop doing the job effectively. Now, whether or not there's someone better might impact whether or not they lose. Like if Palencia starts pitching not as well, but everyone else sucks, he may keep the job a little bit longer. If Hodge comes back and looks like just, you know, an absolutely lights out reliever, then it won't take as much of a struggle from Palencia to do it. But if Palencia keeps saving games, I think he stays in the role. And so far, he keeps saving games. And so my question for you is, and this is an interesting one as we look going forward, especially in keeper leagues and stuff, is he a top 10 reliever moving forward? And what does that mean for his keeper value?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, first of all, it depends on your format, because he's put forward some good strikeout numbers this season. His swing and miss stuff is not that great. He gets 24 strikeouts in 22 innings. The swing strike rate is, to reference Bubich, who is up around 14.6%. Palencia's is down at 11.3%, which is not really what you see from closers. So from a standpoint of a league where like maybe saves don't mean as much, I don't know if he's a top 10 guy. In a league where saves are it, like a regular 5x5, oh man, yes, I think he is top 10, because I think the Cubs are that good, and I think he's going to keep this job. And whether the strikeouts are heavily there or not, he does strike guys out. And so it's similar to like Emmanuel Clase, right, who like is objectively awesome, but doesn't necessarily have the high strikeout numbers of like Camilo Duvall or Josh Hader. Instead, he just consistently saves games for an above average baseball team. And that's kind of what I expect Palencia to do for the Cubs, a team who like was desperately searching for a closer, and they seem to have just fallen into one who was unexpected. And I expect him to run away with this job and potentially save, you know, maybe even 40 games this season. So I do think he's top 10 in 5x5 because of the lack of strikeouts and the lack of track record. We can dock him for that as well. Sure, why not? It's not that serious for relievers, but it caught up to Ryan Walker pretty quickly. In leagues where saves aren't worth as much, then maybe put him just outside the top 10, but definitely for leagues that just count saves.
Yeah. My concern with him is that he gives up, so he has a 39.2% ground ball rate. So he does not get a ton of grounders. And his fly ball rate is 37.3. He's giving up a lot of fly balls. He's also giving up a ton of line drives. 23.5% is a really high line drive rate against. So he's giving up a lot of balls in the air. And if you go look at Palencia's Statcast data, he has a 43.1% hard hit rate against and an average exit velocity against of 90. Those are both too high. And that is concerning to me, especially when the ball's in the air, right? Like he's giving up a high percentage of balls in the air and a high percentage of balls being hit hard. But he has only a 2% barrel rate and a 5.3% home run per fly ball rate. The thing that, as far as I can tell, is keeping that stuff all together, I think. I'm sort of speculating here, but his pull rate against is 23.5%. Guys just cannot turn on the ball against him. I have no idea how sustainable that is. I don't know if that's a thing that, like, just the way he pitches, guys are just hitting the ball to the big part of the park consistently, hitting the ball the other way consistently. And, like, that's not a good way to have success as a major league hitter, which means it is a good way to have success as a major league pitcher, right? If some pitcher could figure out a way to narrow the fields that every ball hit went up straight up the middle, they wouldn't give up very many home runs. They give up a lot of long fly balls that turn into outs. That would be great. But I have no idea if that's a thing. Like, last year, 45% of the balls he gave up were up the middle. This year, it's again 45.1%. I have no sense whatsoever if he can sustainably stop people from going, pulling. Like, that, what did I say? It was 25% was roughly his pull rate against. League-wide, it's 40.6%. He's given 45% of the balls 2 years in a row now up the middle. That's 34.9%. He is getting people to go the other way and up the middle at incredibly high rates. And I just don't know how, I don't know how to read that and be like, yeah, this is legit. Like, he's got the second lowest pull rate against in baseball behind Cade Gibson of Miami, who's totally a player I'm familiar with, I promise. He is top. Where is he? Oh, I just had him. Hold. He is just outside the top 30 in having the highest oppo percentage, and he is 15th in center percentage. So guys just can't pull the ball on him. So, like, I love Itoc Paredes in large part because he just pulls everything. Is Danny Palencia my pitching Itoc Paredes? Have I found his pitching counter?
The world. What I would love to see is what would happen if they faced each other. It's super weird to see those numbers. And I did notice the same thing, especially the pulled fly ball rate, because I love looking at that number. I wonder how much of this is just the fact that it's 22 innings. And there's so much noise when there's just 22 innings. And so when I consider that, what should we look for? The velocity on his fastball is up a little bit over a mile an hour, and the walks have gone way down. Now, the walk rate still isn't great, but it's much, 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 much better than where it was last year. It's so much to the cell where it's at a point where, like, I can live with it. If, you know, you're going to tell me he's going to be getting save opportunities. So I don't know what to make of those weird numbers. I'm going to chalk it up to noise in such a small sample size of innings. The danger of that, though, is that a lot of this could be the result of a small sample of innings. And by the end of the season, we could laugh that we had this conversation because he has an ERA over 5.5 and finishes the season with however many saves he has right now. Like, that is entirely within the realm here. But the idea of getting in on a closer who could be really good for a good team for the keeper cost that he will come with, because this guy definitely got drafted in zero leagues going into the season, is really appetizing. So he is a player I like this year.
Yeah, I mean, without it, my CBS head-to-head, this year I went with basically a zero closer strategy. And I picked up Romano for $1 after he was dropped before. That looked good for a little while, now looks bad again. We'll see where that, I don't know. That's a roller coaster I'm going to keep riding a little bit longer because I don't have any other closers anyways. But I also picked up Palencia for $1 right at the beginning of this stretch. And, like, huge. I'm thrilled. And I am good with that for as long as I'm good with that. And if he ends the season with the job and it looks like he's going to start next season with the job, he becomes a surefire keeper for me, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. I just, if I'm making a prediction right now, my prediction is that as the weather warms up, that hard hit rate against and that barrel rate against turn into home runs, and closers who give up home runs don't stay closers. Sure. And that's what I would guess we get out of Palencia at some point. But the other possibility here is that, like, guys can't pull the ball on him, and so the only option they have is to drive it up the middle. And so as the pull rate comes up, it's worse contact. And so that the contact, basically the StatCast number is correct. As guys try to pull the ball more, they try to do more damage, they can't, and things start to look better. So I'm just going to go along for the ride and see what's what. But anyways, Pete, we got through some pitchers. Little bit of a shorter episode this week, but I got to get going. So we're going to cut this off here. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.